No, where were we?
Look, I don't think it ought to be blasphemy. Just saying Jehovah.
You're only making it worse for yourself.
Making it worse? How could it be worse? Jehovah, Jehovah, Jehovah.
I'm warning you, if you say Jehovah once more. Right, who threw that? Come on, who threw that?
Was it you?
Yes.
Right.
Well, you did say Jehovah.
Will you hold that? Come here. Now look, no one is to stone anyone until I blow this whistle. Do you understand? Even, and I want to make this absolutely clear, even if they do say Jehovah.
This is kind of off topic, but I wanted to can you guys still hear me? Because I'm wandering around right now.
Sure, yeah, no problem.
I wanted to show you guys something that is related to everything we're talking about, and it's something I keep wanting to bring up in a lot of these conversations, and there's never really an opportune moment, so I'm just going to force it on you guys. but I think I think this is actually a really appropriate forum to bring this up. It's one of my kind of sub-archetypal particle conspiracy theories. And where is my tablet? One second. Oh, here it is. Okay. Okay. If I can just... You guys will humor me for a moment here. I'm going to share my screen, if I may. I'm going to open up Photoshop. And for our listeners, I guess I'll try to...
Are we having listeners? Are we... I guess we're recording this. We're always recording. But yeah, but,
I think, yeah, I think Alan intends to make this an episode.
Oh, okay. I'll watch myself a bit more then.
No, man, don't hold back.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, Zenor, I'm just kidding. Okay, let's see here. So, I never remember how to do this. Share screen. Share entire screen. Okay,
while we just hit the make more editing for Alan button.
Okay, well, I'll try to describe what I'm doing. So you guys can see this, right?
Totally, yeah.
Okay, so, and you can see me drawing right now?
Yeah, can Zenor, can you see that?
Okay, no, just a second. It's coming up. Yep.
Okay, so you guys are familiar then with these four... symbols, right?
I think I've seen them.
Is there a distinction between the second and the fourth?
I just drew the letters IVHV.
Right.
Isn't this the name of God?
This is the Tetragrammaton.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Okay, so it's the two Hays?
Well, this is the Latin version of what? This? Or let me see. It's like this, something like this, or...
You said these four characters, but there's actually only three characters there, right? An I, a V, and an H, whereas the V is used twice.
Oh, Alan.
So I was trying to clarify.
You and your semantical perfection.
Well, because actually in Hebrew there's a meaning to the two Hays that they are essentially different.
Okay. Well, we can get into that. We can get into that, but...
Sorry.
No. That's actually good. That's really good. So...
It's interesting that hey in Japanese is fart.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Two hits.
Yeah. Hey, LBJ.
Hey. Dude, when I... When I was in Tokyo about a year and a half ago, my wife is from Italy, and...
All right.
We call each other amore, you know,
okay.
Like my love or whatever. And
right.
and it kind of just on its own became shorthand for instead of saying amore, now we say like all three syllables if we're really mad at each other. But our shorthand is just to say more. And we're wandering around Tokyo, and they're like, more, more. And every now and then, we're getting these really unusual looks from Japanese people. And I finally like found a resource online where I could kind of say what I, you know, I could get like a speech-to-text translation service, so I could say what I was like, all right, I'm going to say something in Japanese and tell me what it means. And so I would say more, right. And apparently it means leakage in Japanese. And so we were all walking around saying leakage, leakage, and getting some very strange looks. Anyway, I digress. Okay, so check this out. I discovered that, now you guys have heard my McLuhan episode where I talk about the myth of Cadmus and the teeth.
Sowing the teeth of the
dragon, okay? And I'm obsessed with letters and characters and glyphs and all of that stuff. So check this out. So I discovered that if you take... Oops. I might be revealing something way too top secret, and I might be struck down by the wrath of God in the middle of this discussion. So if I drop off the line, that explains it. But anyway, so you take the Tetragrammaton, right? And you've got these characters, right? We all know these. Okay, so now if I were to take...
And for listeners, it basically I'm looking at the letter... I, the letter V, the letter H, the letter V. So a romanized version of Tetragrammaton.
Correct.
Jehovah.
Right. Now,
Stop him! He said Jehovah!
Put in the Latin alphabet, Jehovah begins with an I. Okay, so... okay, so let me just duplicate this really quick.
Jehovah, Jehovah.
And let's see. So if I do this, and if I just want this to be all white. Okay, so then, now if I take this, what I'm doing now is I'm making a duplicate, oh shit, sorry, of this. Eh! Okay.
There
you go. So I've made a copy of those four characters, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip it horizontal so that it's a mirror image. So now it's VHVI, okay?
So now we see VH, VI, IV, HV.
Correct.
It's already satanic, Wally.
Already?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shit. Okay, so... Oh, wait a minute. What am I doing wrong?
God! Dog!
So, wait, now it's not
teeth?
Working. So basically, yes, these are teeth. But it's not working the way it's supposed to work. Let me look in my notebook. These are basically like... I figured it out so that the teeth that are actually visible to an observer... Oh, it's not... I'm spelling it wrong. Such an asshole. Okay, you're going to have to edit this.
Well, yes, you're an asshole, but it's all right about misspelling something.
Haha. Okay, so it's IHVH, not the other way around. It's Yod Hev. You guys didn't catch that?
Or well, I'm not used to
this
English.
I was wondering about it, but
it's Yod He Vav He.
Yeah. Okay. This is what it's supposed to be. Okay. No wonder I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Okay. So let's try this again. So I'm sorry, I'm totally monopolizing our discussion with my little.
That's right.
A little theory here, but I've always wanted to share it. So let me just do this again. And okay, now we've got it again, and I'm gonna flip it.
Can I ask a kind of dickly question?
How dickly?
Well, so I can't say, like, I don't think I've ever seen this, like, using, you know, like Romanization of this, or
oh really?
Arabic letters, Is that common? Do either of you know? I don't.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Boom. There it is.
So, and you have the canine teeth.
I've got, okay, so this is, so if you picture.
Wow, I just got a massive wave of deja vu with this. I don't.
Yeah, dude, this is,
why, but,
this is crazy to me because it's like when you, if you consider this, you know, basically these are the main two front teeth right here. And if you actually open your mouth and open your lips as much as you can without actually pulling them apart with your fingers, these are all the visible teeth.
That's crazy, man.
So, what the fuck is what I'm wondering? Like,
that's a mind blower, really.
That is a mind. Thank you. Okay, it's not just me. It's bizarre because there is this whole. Like, especially when I encountered a lot of McLuhan's discussions about the teeth as this... in one of my episodes, I turn it into a song, and so you can't... It's harder to understand, but he has this amazing little statement that I actually use in the song, and you know, the teeth as an agent of power. And a lot of these theories I have about phonemes and... remember at the very beginning, you guys have both seen the film Fight Club, I presume.
Yeah.
Okay, one of the first things, there's that whole opening sequence with the credits, and it turns out it zooms out, and there's Tyler Durden with a gun in Ed Norton's mouth, right?
Mm.
And one of the, and what he's, and Tyler Durden says, "Did you think of anything yet?" And then Ed Norton's character goes, "Ha, ha, 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 ha." And then his internal dialogue says, "With a gun in your mouth, you only speak in vowels." Okay, and so what are all the phonemes? What are the phonemes that are actually you can utter when when your mouth has been physically impeded by some, you know, oppressor? Or like, what if your tongue has been cut out? Or what if you have a gag in your mouth? What if you're in a position where you are the weaker member of some conflict, and you need to impart crucial information that's going to help you survive to somebody else who's on your team, if you will, that, you know, but you don't have a tongue, or you have a gun in your mouth, like, and you can only speak in vowels, or you have had all your teeth knocked out. And that was why I was nagging my friend who's the speech pathologist about, like, what's the name of this word, a palatal fricative or whatever, and they have all of these technical terms for all of the different phonemes we can create based on how your tongue is touching your teeth, how air is being blocked or stopped or whatever through your trachea, your lips, whether or not they're pursed or not. And it's like you go through history and you look at all of these words, especially in terms of, like, You look at words in Old English versus Middle English, and you see the influence of the Norman invasion. It's like, look at the words that mean secret or hidden or threat or kill, or all of these words that would be associated with some oppressing culture invading, right? And like, what are the words that are going to preserve the culture that has been invaded or that is being oppressed? You know, and it's like certain phonemes that suddenly appear or disappear from Old English to Middle English are certain phonemes that are only utterable when you have, like, you know, when your tongue has been cut out, or, you know what I'm saying? So you see what I'm getting at? Like, there's almost this conspiracy of the phonetic components of language. Not conspiracy, but you can trace this history of oppression in terms of how words are morphing. And it's
interesting.
So, and I think that this is something that Joyce is getting at in Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you consider it, you interpret it differently based on how you hear it versus how you see it versus how you say it. I mean, I don't know. Okay, I'll stop there because I could go all night on this topic. But I'm on the record with my tetragrammaton is teeth theory.
Well, okay, if we add to that, this is where David would be good, you know. So we have the letter shin in the Hebrew alphabet, which literally means teeth, right?
And what?
It seriously, and it gets it's the 21st letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and it gets translated into the Phoenician alphabet as a W, yeah. So then you have in your representation of the teeth, you have the two V's, the two canine teeth. You put those together, they're the teeth. That's shin right there, right?
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind over here.
And then this is something I wrote in my blog quite a long time ago, but talking about in Hebrew. Okay, so in Hebrew, there's a sort of pun in Hebrew. So the Hebrew for Jesus is Yeshua, which is, well, in English it's YHSHWH, right? Which has only one more letter, also in the middle of the word, to Yahweh, which is YHWH, yeah? So if you add the extra shin, which is the teeth, you add basically the shin in the middle of Yahweh, then you come up with this word Yeshua, which is Jesus, right? So it's kind of...
Huh.
It's like adding the teeth to God, you get...
Well, putting the teeth of God into the law or to the word. I mean, the word is law. I mean, the word of God is law, right? And teeth are an agent of power, and also we're like the first. It's the only built-in weapon we have. Natural weapon is our teeth. And any.
I'll read this part. I don't know exactly where I took this from. The Hebrew for tooth is shin, which is also the name of the 21st and penultimate letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The English equivalent to shin is S or SH, but in Phoenician it's written as a W, perhaps because of its trident shape, literally three-toothed, and sibilant pronunciation. The Kabbalists associate this letter with the element fire. Shin also appears somewhat like a descending dove, so it should come as no surprise that a relationship between it and the Holy Spirit exists. The numerical value of both the letter taken by itself and the Hebrew phrase ruach, ruach alhim, the Spirit of God, usually translated Elohim, is 300, serves to solidify the connection. The Spirit is often represented as a flame, one example being the tongues of fire that came to rest on the apostles' heads on that first Pentecost. Many spirits and other air elementals have been associated with fire as well. So you have the tooth and fire, and then associated with the day of Pentecost.
Wow.
Which is this
is a blog entry of yours?
Yeah, yeah.
Could you post the link to that particular page? I really want to read this.
Yeah.
See, this is right at the heart of my personal interests in studying the mysteries, or whatever you want to call it, is in these really kind of basic. I mean, because coming back to McLuhan, he's all, his whole gist really is media is an extension of the human body, and so let's bring it back to the human body, and what right, I mean right. if that's what we're all born with, right? And so technology is an extension of every part of the human body, and language is an extension of our minds. But initially we relied on our mouths and our teeth and our tongue and our vocal folds and our lips, you know. And
in Hebrew, these letters are named after body parts. In the most part.
Same right? with it's, the it's Phoenician like alphabet
direct
too.
Direct extensions, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a book called The Esoteric Alphabet that was written at the turn of the 20th century that makes a similar claim that the Latin alphabet is based on the human body as well. Let me see if I have it. I have it somewhere here in my notebooks. But, you know, it's funny, the word grin in Old English means trap.
Means trap?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. And it's so funny, like the prototypical grid, like I talk about this with McLuhan, but like the only place in nature where we would see any type of grid layout that is reminiscent of the printing press is the teeth. And, you know, the word grid, G-R-I-D, you know, I have it written down here. It's like it's your grill or it's your G-R-I-D. You know, it's like people are going around like laying down the law by going "Arr!" like, and we were talking about earlier, like with the pirates saying "Arr!" And it sounds so childish and reductive, but thousands of years ago, these ideas were not so considered so simple. We didn't have the accumulation of history like we have today that make these concepts seem too obvious to really lend any credence to.
Well, then there's the idea that Joyce plays with again, coming from Vico, right? Which the origin of language came from the voice of the thunder, right?
Yes. And, oh, I can't wait for you to hear part two, because we get way into that with McLuhan.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's great, yeah. Is Alan still here, or what happened?
I'm totally here, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
This is turning into quite a discussion.
It's getting to that point where I'm having to stop and think about so many different things before I can even say anything anymore. My mind is reeling now.
Do you know that the Hebrew character for the Yod, which is part of the Tetragrammaton, right? I read somewhere that its design or its shape is based on this idea of a breath hitting a flame.
There's you'd want to do some. Oh God, what's his name? There's a guy who basically argues that the entire Hebrew language is based off of, like, if you hold these items up to a flame, basically, like, the shadow. So, like, they call Hebrew, like the flame language. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And then there was an argument that these are, like, sort of based on the shadows that could be cast.
What is that guy's name? I know exactly who you mean.
That's pretty fascinating, whatever you're describing.
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a total blank.
Well, anybody who's listening to this should let us know if you know who he's talking about.
David will be screaming at it when he hears this. You know?
David Plake? Is that who you're talking about?
David Plake. Yeah, exactly. Stan Tenen.
Yeah, that's right.
I just Googled it. I could have waited for someone to write into the show, but I was like, I could just Google that myself.
Mm-hmm.
Here, audience, let me Google that for you. Exactly. Yeah. So he. Exactly. I do wish Dave was here to speak to the aspect of the Hebrew language that I can't. But not only, you know, for them is there there's a whole bunch of stuff here, which, like, say when we were looking at the examples of Wally, that code that you copied and pasted with the, you know, wailing waitress, unapprehensive,
yeah.
But then, like, hidden in there would be like, "Hey there, gorgeous, my name is Ethel."
Yep.
And then hidden within, like, it's almost like Easter eggs within Easter eggs within Easter eggs.
Yep.
This is something that David and I have talked a great length about, where he's like, this is actually like a Kabbalistic technique for both encoding and decoding the Bible. So, like, what they'll do is they'll say, okay, you know, like, every 5 words, you extract that word, right? Or you could, like, we were talking, like, you could take 2 different texts and you interweave them. So you could either do like every other word. So like, I don't know, here, like, you have any book handy?
Yeah.
Somebody have a book
yeah.
handy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want us all to do this? Like,
yeah,
let's do it.
Leave three books together.
Yes.
Right. I'm going to go to page 93.
Okay.
Yeah, 93. Okay, I get it.
Got it?
There aren't 237 pages in this book, or I would have done that. So, like, I'll read a word, then you read a word, then Znor, you read, then I'll go to the next one.
Starting
right?
on the first...
I that's what I'm going to do. It doesn't matter.
What if we skip... What if we stay in sequence? So, like, you read the first word on your page, I read the second word on my page, Znor reads the third, etc. Or is that too complicated?
So then I go to the fourth.
Correct.
Got
yeah.
you. Okay, sure.
What order?
I don't think that's how it works for what David would be. Explain what David's not here, and we're doing our own experiment, so let's play with it.
Okay.
So what's the order again? You, and then me, and then Wally?
Sure, that's fine.
All right.
Corresponding.
Had.
Proposition.
Card.
At.
That.
Minor.
Of.
Relation.
Playing.
It.
Terms.
Through.
Been.
To.
Onto.
And.
Proposition.
Spheres.
Acquaintanceship.
If.
Tree.
Chrysler.
The.
Suits.
Taken.
A.
Cards.
About.
Fact.
As.
Ah.
Proposition.
Royal.
That.
A.
Each.
Pretended.
But.
Knight.
To.
Simple.
King.
There.
Categorical.
The.
No.
Proposition.
Worlds.
Therefore.
If.
Image.
Asserts.
The.
At.
As.
Is.
Ernst.
Necessary.
The.
Opt.
Contingent.
They.
On.
Proposition. That's the fifth time.
And.
Somebody.
That.
Same.
At.
Least.
Symbols.
Chrysler.
A.
For.
More.
May.
Representing.
Than.
Hypothetical.
From.
The.
A.
Condition.
Of.
Asserts.
Toward.
Friend.
Of.
Of.
Could.
On.
The.
Fixed.
Example.
Hebrew.
And.
Does.
There.
Whom.
He.
As.
Last.
Three.
The.
Explanation.
Disjunctive.
Pages.
Come.
That.
Map.
Unfair.
Or.
Oh, screwed up.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What?
I read out of order. It doesn't matter though. But okay, so.
Wait. So what books were you guys reading from?
I was reading Tar by Wyndham Lewis.
Okay.
I was reading Ezra's Astro Music.
And I was reading The Trivium.
Oh, sorry, there's a connection between those three.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I said proposition five times.
That almost put me into a trance doing that. It was great.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was a lot of fun. So, you know, what, you know, David's sort of point would be that you can... some of the rabbinical writers might have done stuff like that. So then you would decode you would essentially like de-nest these the interlaced things. And one of the examples he uses is the interlacing. If you take two hands and you put the fingers together, that you would have this interlacing, two different things interwoven. And so if you wanted to get one or the other as a decoding, or to have them augment each other, you put them together. So what we just did is more like a braid, I guess, right? If it's three components.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a braiding of text. That's excellent.
Wow.
Yeah, here's the bit from Vico, just to just to bring this up. So this is from the New Science. Thereupon, a few giants, who must have been the most robust and who were dispersed through the forests on the mountain heights where the strongest beasts have their dens, were frightened and astonished by the great effect whose cause they did not know, and raised their eyes and became aware of the sky. They pictured the sky to themselves as a great animated body, which in that aspect they called Jove, the first god of the so-called greater gents, who meant to tell them something by the hiss of his bolts and the clap of his thunder. And thus they began the natural curiosity, which is the daughter of ignorance and the mother of knowledge, and which, opening the mind of man, gives birth to wonder.
Wow.
Yeah, that's great.
It is.
Is that, Wally, is that your cat, like, wailing in the background?
No.
That was my daughter wailing in the background.
Oh! That really set, from here, it sounded like a cat.
Well, she's imitating to be some sort of animal, so I could
gotcha.
Be a cat. Yeah.
She was like, I can play this kind of linguistic game, too.
Yeah.
She was the voice of the thunder.
Totally. Wow, more Danny.
Well, this is what I was doing when you asked if I was still here. Did you see what's on the door?
What's on the door?
Oh, shut the fuck up.
you just did that.
I just did that.
Oh, man.
That's...
That's crazy.
It's because I had sent you the picture of Danny, and then you were taking the text and mirroring it, that it made me... I had Danny's face on my screen as you're mirroring text, and I was like, oh, this is...
Well, isn't that bizarre, though? Because, like, I mean, I don't mean to come back to this and just belabor it, but, like, that is anatomically correct.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That is very profound, yeah.
Like, to, yeah, or at least...
It's amazing, really.
It's anatomically correct based on what is visible when the mouth is... When the mouth is grinning or gurring, you know, or, you know, growling.
And the fact that it's translated from Hebrew, right? It's not even...
It's the Latin version.
It should not even work in Latin, you know? It's like, it
right.
obviously wasn't designed that way, or unless the entire... Latin alphabet was designed to cover this, you know, but that seems...
It's also, you've also got, but you've, and you've got two components of Roman numerals in there too, the I and the V.
Yeah, that's right.
H was not in, or is the H even in the Latin alphabet?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, it is? Okay.
So we have V-I-V, which is 5, 5, and 1. So we've got 11 here, as those. So that's interesting, too. It's a big 11.
Yeah, 11 is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Was it in Latin, was it there was no J originally, right? It was an I?
Correct.
Yeah.
And also the V is a U.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. If you read Old English texts, they're interchangeable. Sometimes the U is changed to be a V or written as a V. And
right.
Then sometimes it's the opposite as well. Vs are written as U's. And so it's...
Oh, weird.
Yeah. That's something else McClellan is talking about, is how print standardized spelling and grammar, right?
Right.
And the whole sense of the standardization of the spell, you know?
Of the spell. Of the spell.
Yeah, precise, which is where I was just going to go with this. Exactly, like the whole idea of grammar being connected to grimoire and all that sort of stuff seems rather explicit when you comes down to standardization, right? It's like the idea of, you know, what is the idea of any, you know, magical school of thought? You know, I don't care if you're the Golden Dawn or you're, Hare Krishna or whomever, the idea is that you feel like you've got it down to science. This is the mantra. And if you say this mantra every day, you will, you know, reach enlightenment or, turn your cell phone into, summon a demon or whatever it is you're trying to do. Hey, we figured out that if you do this 12 times, you know, if you say Beetlejuice, 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 that's how it happens. You can't say Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beelzebub. You know, it's like you got to do what is the formula? And this is the very idea of saying, oh, you have to have this comma has to appear here. This, you know, it seems rather explicit once you any kind of standardized grammar aside from, you know, obviously a certain amount of attempting to convey as clearly as possible the true intent, which, you know, there's a practicality to standardization, but at a certain point it does become not so much conducive to furthering accuracy, but it almost seems dogmatic.
Yeah, have you guys ever wailed with the Krishnas? Have you ever, like, gone to a temple and started chanting with them when they get out the drums and start to dance and chant? And yeah, have you ever done that? That's some of the best times that I've had. Like, I remember this one time, it was at the millennium, like, right, the year 2000, like Y2K. And I just saw the big fireworks displays in Toronto. And then we're leaving now. There's tons of people on the street. We're just going down the street, and the Hare Krishnas were out on the sidewalk, like just chanting Hare Krishna and wailing and drumming and dancing. And so I was like, wow, I'm gonna join. And I just went crazy. I loved it. And then as I was doing it, this guy was coming up to me, and it was like this Krishna was coming up to me and was like trying to give me some literature and saying, oh, you should come to our meeting. We're having this on whatever Sunday or whatever. I was like, dude, I'm doing it right now, you know? It's like, why are you interrupting this, you know? It's like, you obviously don't believe it, you know, in a way.
Right.
So it's kind of like what you're saying, Alan. It becomes this sort of dogmatic thing where it's like something beyond the actual incantation becomes what's real, you know?
And can I just
sort of the theory behind it, or the sort of religious dogma behind it becomes more important than the actual happening, you know?
Well, this is the difference between true gnosis, right? Like, the idea would be if you had the true Gnostic moment, the transcendental moment, you wouldn't need the religious text,
right?
You know,
right.
The if you're, you know, almost if you're, it goes back to what I was saying before about, say, McKenna saying culture's not your friend, or Miyazaki saying the film is not your friend, or McLuhan saying the media is not your friend. You know, all of these sorts of ideas, it's like, for the religious, the true religious person, you would have to do the Buddhist thing and throw the book out. You would have to say, you know, the book might have carried you to a certain point, but if you actually had a Gnostic experience, it would transcend whatever can be conveyed in the written language, whatever
yes.
can be understood conceptually.
I know that that point of view. I have thought like that as well. But I also think it's also in the written language. You know, you know what I'm saying. So you reading the book is also the Gnostic experience. It comes through the page as well.
I think that actually goes back to what I. So again, I'm not sort of saying, if anything, I actually agree with you and was, here's something I'm going to just be very clear. I've struggled with this. When I said at the beginning, I said, I've busted the balls of synchro mystics who tout, you know, pop culture, as a sort of quasi religion. And at the same time, we're all about Terence McKenna. I'm saying, well, how do you rectify the seeming disparity there, right? Well, I mean, I started off as more of the absolute, I mean, as anti-media as you can get. You know, it wasn't just that I was a conspiracy theorist. It was, I just found, this is perhaps a bit personal, but I mean, when I was a kid, I had a television in my bedroom. I didn't have cable, but I had the antenna. And I remember at being a certain age that I just ripped the antenna out and just unplugged the TV. My brother would plug it in for like video games. When I became a teenager, I got a VCR and I'd watch porn on it, you know, but I never watched TV. Like I didn't have TV in my life for so long, but in my there was a TV in the living room that my mother and brother would always watch, and you could say I was pretentious, you could say I was whatever, but I would like they'd be sitting there watching TV, and I would just look at them like total zombies, like they're just staring at the screen, and I'd try to have a conversation with them, and they're like and I'm like, I hate the television so much. Like, it drove me crazy. Like, I hate this fucking box. I want this box to die. This thing is like taking my family away from me, basically. And I found it so fucking boring and inane, and advertisements shouting at you. And like, if I'd go to someone's house and there'd be a TV on, I would like, it would bother me to like no level, right?
Wow.
So I sort
me,
of
me too. I was exactly the same. If I went to a bar with a TV in it, I'd have to leave.
Right.
<You know? laughs>
And it's only so, you know, if you wanna this in a lot of ways, this whole sync thing that I've been doing for the last, I don't know, 7 years or so, is sort of me reconciling the fact that I fucking hate it, and I still believe that the gnosis can be in the written text, the gnosis can be in the, you know, the fucking cathode ray tube of the television or the electronic signal, that whereas I'm sort of came at it seeing the media as McLuhan's sort of antichrist, I'm almost had to make the realization that while there was a 90% chance that this thing was the Antichrist, there was a 10% chance that it was the manifest transcendental Christ, you know, that he originally saw. That was like, I came going, oh, okay, like, it's almost like, how could anything, while you mentioned the tetrad sort of thing, like, it's not just a thing that makes people brain dead. It's a transmission, and within that is a kernel of something else.
Sure.
And I'm sort of been making my peace with that ever since.
Well, I think ultimately it's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
Like whether or not the beholder chooses to interpret the signal as the Antichrist or as the Second Coming is all dependent on context, on perspective, on a variety on the signal that is being transmitted. I mean, there's so many parameters.
It flips constantly as well, right?
Like yes,
it continually changes. You're continually flipping from
quite literally, it's
to
flipping
hell to purgatory. You know,
I mean, it's flickering too. I mean, quite literally, and like every frame or every line that it's drawing or every pixel that it's rendering, you know, it's kind of manifesting that potential.
Yeah, Alan, you were mentioning that your kind of frustration with some of the sync heads about this, right? And I've always been kind of thinking about this. It's not really a split, it's not really an opposition. It's sort of complementarity or something between the sort of Jupiter people who are obvious, right? The people who are really into Jupiter, and then other people who are not so obvious into Saturn, you know, like Mark LeClaire is probably the most obvious in that sort of side of things, right? But then you have, so there's always this split Saturn and Jupiter, which that split becomes a split in time. Saturn as Kronos and then Jupiter as space, right, the biggest planet. And then again we have the split between eye and ear, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there's two major factions, right? Like, you know, it's, I sort of think of it as if you walked around ancient Greece, you know, maybe you paid your biggest tributes to, you know, the temple of Zeus, but you know, there was still you know, various smaller temples, and there might be a cult that was dedicated to, you know, Venus and Aphrodite, or there might be a, you know, a Diana moon cult, and all these sorts of different smaller temples and some not so small temples. You know, ultimately every one of these archetypes have to be honored. We definitely seem to fixate on, like you said, the Winnipeg crew fixates on Jupiter, which right. annoys the piss out of me, I'll admit. I also realize that I'm very much Saturnian. You know, LeClaire focuses on Saturn because he sees it as, in a lot of ways, his sort of he's positing Saturn as the Antichrist figure. He's saying there is this devilish, satanic cabal or energetic that's imposing its will upon humanity. Whereas me, I mean, I'm a Capricorn. I'm born on New Year's Eve. I don't know. I don't.
Well, both sides are there, right? Because like Saturn gets banished to the underworld, right?
Totally,
So if he's the ear, right, you have in McLuhan's thinking the sort of enhancement of the eye with print, and then the ear, that sort of oral culture, gets banished to our unconscious, right? That's what happens, and then it surfaces again. It surfaces again with the electronic media, right?
Yes. And the acoustic environment.
But the same thing with the myth of Saturn is that before he was overthrown by Zeus, the Saturnian age was the age of gold, right? Or again, you know, the oral world, right? So you have both there, right? So in your way of thinking, maybe, Alan, you're emphasizing the earlier stage of what Saturn represents, and then Mark LeClaire is looking at it through the underworld perspective, right? But it's really looking at the same thing, right? It's looking
at... Oh,
absolutely.
And for the record, it's not that I'm so looking at it from a golden perspective. I see every archetype as embodying its light and dark qualities, you know? Here's something. Let's make some distinctions here. We keep saying Christ, Antichrist, let's say something. To me, they're inseparable,
yep.
Right?
Right?
They are the same. They are the same being, and so you know, it's can you know can an axe be used to construct a house, you know, to chop down a tree and construct a house and fashion, you know, tools and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, and it can be also used as a weapon. You know, it's like, how do you choose to, either how do you choose to use it or how does it choose to express itself? But there's no distinction, you know, particularly like we're having this conversation on a, you know, national level of like, you know, guns, do guns kill people or people kill people, right? Well, it's the same idea. It's like we're saying, you know, is the archetype bad or people, you know, worshipping its negative aspects, you know, or
right,
you know, or
right.
choosing to sort of embody them at least. It's very hard for me to see that the Christ and Antichrist are two different things. So I totally recognize that I don't look at Saturn as a golden thing. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it's kind of hard, like, stepping into these realms. Here's a perfect example. I read from Ezra's Astro Music. It's on my desk only because I've been doing these synchronized episodes where I have to put graphics in the lower left-hand corner. Oh, this song is in the key of G sharp or whatever, and then I look up, you know, what does that correspond to, so I can put the graphics in the corner. It's why this book is sitting on my desk. But I actually take issue with this book, even though I helped him put it out, is because, you know, he writes, I was joking with this with my wife the other day, it's like, he writes, you know, all these charts about what are the different astrological signs, and what are they, you know, what do they correspond to, and what do they mean, you know, and it's like, So funny. My cat is wailing. I don't know if you can hear that, but that's why I was like, when I first heard it, I was like, is that my cat? And I'm like, no, my cat is fucking wailing. Anyway, he has all these, this one section where he's saying like, oh, you know, Mars, which to me, I have to admit, I have a bias towards Mars. I see Mars as the god of war. Like,
right.
Fuck that. That's not a positive thing, right? But he writes, keywords, life force energy, breaking through previous limitations, the will to be in the world, courage to confront and overcome obstacles. You know, it's like the fearless warrior, positive stress in the pressure cooker, motivation to pursue and accomplish goals, excitement and the evolutionary impulse. The only thing here that he has that's negative is selfishness with heart. So it still has heart. So, again, that's something that if I would have a bias towards an astrological archetype, it would be that. But now once you go to fucking Capricorn, it's like hunger for power, taking advantage of others for personal gain, gratification of desires, opportunistic organisms, integration of the shadow, unapologetic and aggressive self-interest. It's like, fuck you, man. I'm a fucking Capricorn. Fuck you. Right? So, if anything... you know, my thing is not that Saturn is the golden age, and I totally know where you're going with that from a mythological perspective, but mine is a much more, like, personal and practical, like, whoa. Saturn is not just eating babies and Satan, you know,
What sign are you, Wally?
Aquarius.
Aquarius, interesting. Okay, so we, So Alan and I, I'm Virgo, so Alan and I are both Earth signs, right?
Yep.
Which I kind of feel that with you, Alan, that you're kind of earthy.
But actually, see, to me, Capricorn is, again, is both, because it's the it's half goat, half fish. So it's able to be in the water or on the land, right? And which is its underworld aspect. It's half submerged.
You like the mud, maybe.
Mud shark.
That's what, according to Finnegan's Wake again, that's what Napoleon called the fifth element is mud. You know, as he was trying to bring his armies into Russia, and they just got caught in the mud. They couldn't, it was the same old story, trying to invade Russia, and just huge supply lines that just got sucked in by mud.
Interesting.
So I'm sorry I ranted there, but
no, that was good.
Yeah, that was excellent.
I guess.
So, yeah, but even Jupiter, right? Like, so it's not unambiguous either. You know, it's like Jupiter the jovial, right, on one side, but then he's a tyrant on the other.
Absolute
side.
Absolute tyrant. You know, absolute tyrant. I mean, this is the Doug when. so Doug, you know, used to write for The Sinkhole, which for like a sort of sink historian, you know, a lot of this stuff comes out of the Kotzian, right? You have like the early sort of Kotze days. And then there's this group blog, which Mark LaQuaire, Jay Kotze, and Doug Bowles from 42 Minutes, and Will Morgan, these guys also used to write together on a group blog, you know, which now we see them as such drastically separate entities, but these guys used to all associate and work together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Doug's basic break with them was like over the whole Jupiter thing, and he's like, that archetype, he just couldn't make peace with it. He's like, he's a dick. He cheats on his wife. He's fucking everything. He rapes things. He's like, for me, I look at him like this was the symbol of, you know, the Roman sort of imperialism. Again, I just have a hard time. It's not that I'm saying, yay, Saturn's great. I'm like, they're all terrible on certain levels and all great on certain levels, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
If the heart of darkness resides in all men, then clearly the heart of darkness resides in all archetypes and mythological gods.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting to think of this group or any group sort of manifesting different archetypes, right, or different gods. Like I've heard from Bill about the Sinkhole. I haven't been able to find this because I don't know where it's buried. But Mark LaClaire's interaction with a bunch of other writers there, and it's apparently it gets into all kinds of crazy fireworks and stuff. I think Mark LaClaire was finally asked to leave or something, wasn't he?
I don't know the. You know, interpersonal drama. I don't know that. I know that they all had a bunch of them at some point had a falling out. But
is this the same Mark that was on the very first Sync Book hangout that I?
Yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm.
And he gave like a talk that went on for a while.
That's Mark. Yeah.
Okay.
We all of us who can talk a lot, he puts us to shame. So
yeah.
But
I think that was the reason, because I think it was the following hangout you asked me to talk about Xenochrony, and that was where I self-imposed a 10-minute deadline on my own talk, because I was like, man, I don't want to be in that position,
right,
of being the guy that goes on for like 80 minutes or whatever.
But that's just it. I mean, you know, when you find people that you can speak to about this, it's hard for me because I've been, on a personal level, like I've been doing Always Record now for a long time. And each of these shows could be, you know, 2-3 hours or whatever, right? And even if I'm not talking throughout the whole thing, it's just a lot of fucking talking. And every now and then I go through phases where I'm just like, I don't want to talk. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm tired of hearing my own voice. And then, but it's almost like, less about, I think, conveying my thoughts and just being part of the conversation. And obviously, again, what we're all learning here, I'm doing it right now. I'm saying I just want to be part of a conversation where I can talk to people, like-minded individuals. But I think a lot of us, particularly maybe American males, find it hard to do that without just being the dominant talker or, you know, something.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just talking to a couple of friends last night, and that's what one of my friends was saying, is he's sick of these kind of conversations, like just where he meets old friends or whatever, and it just turns into one person telling a story, and then the next person tells a story, and then the next person tells a story, and then he's expected to tell a story, and then it's like, and as friends get together, the stories start to repeat, and it gets more and more tedious, you know? And,
yeah.
So he was saying like you really cherished our meeting last night because we're more into ideas and concepts and like poetry or whatever. Like we don't have to continue in that sort of way of speaking, you know.
A similar tendency that reminds me of that I has been a personal just pet peeve of mine in terms of conversations are just the tendency of one-upsmanship, you know,
where you can't
seem to have this discussion without, or people just, the only way that they can contribute to a conversation is by projection of their own, like, they can't just sit and, or they can't necessarily have a back and forth where they're exploring something that they don't even know necessarily where they're going with. They're not there, or you know, it's always just got to be, I'm going to project my own point of view on whatever it is that you're saying. And it's kind of like, really? Or it's like certain friends of mine, I have gotten to the point where I won't really ever share anything that I'm like really into that I know might surprise them, because they'll just shit all over it because that's their, their take on it. Like I was talking to a coworker the other day, and I'm like, so yeah, you know, I've been on this health kick lately and I'm taking up tennis. And they're like, tennis? Oh God, that's such a stupid sport. I'm just like, anyway, okay. So I'm not going to talk about anything I like anymore. You know,
I'll just complain with you.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I mean, or just,
oh, can I
please,
play
please
devil's advocate here?
Yes.
As the Saturnian Satanist in the group.
You bastard.
I mean, I was going to ask, like, so Zenora's comment of saying, finding it difficult to have these conversations. And I was going to say, I have to admit, totally, I'm going to be like totally real here, is to say, I both think I'm an asshole for it, and I can't, like, I feel like an elitist asshole, and I can't help but feel this way. It's like, if I'm at work with my coworkers and people are like, oh, did you see what Kanye West did at the Oscars last night? And, you know, or talking about these, like, to me, really inane things, and I'm just like, I'm sitting there quiet, like in my head, screaming at myself on the top of my inner voice, being like, get me the fuck out of here.
Sure.
I can't do this.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's, I realize how terrible that is.
I'm in the same boat, man. I really am.
But I guess what I'm saying here is, so what is the distinction between us feeling like, I don't know, whether it be intellectually superior, you know, fooling ourselves and like, oh, what I'm into is so much more interesting than you talking about, you know, who's going to win the football game this year.
Right.
You know, and at the same time, being the fucking dickhead hater at your job, being like, tennis? I hate tennis.
Sure. Like, I've grappled with this very problem for years. And I think that the only way I have been able to reconcile it so that I don't drive myself mad or I don't off myself because I become so depressed thinking that, you know, I can't relate to anyone is it's all valid, man. It's all valid. It's like, you know, my old band, one of our, like, the mantra, if you will, of my band is that we were aesthetically beneath everything. So that puts us in a position where we didn't have to justify anything as long as it sounded good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten into, like, when I was in music school, I would bring up, in one conversation, we'd be talking about this obscure, academic, highly intellectualized music, and then I would try to steer the conversation into something that, you know, and then I'd be like, and then there's this great Michael Jackson song. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, right, that's beneath you, sorry, you know? And it's like, I still, to this day, I like listening to Michael Jackson. I think it's great popular music, and I think I have always personally had a profound fascination with anything that has that ability to speak to millions of people. And whether or not it's the kind of thing that people are just jumping on a bandwagon and following a trend or not, you know. But there are certain artists, fine artists, who have transcended the realm of the obscure or the academic or the intellectual and have spoken to, you know, have spoken some grain of truth to millions of people. And the first person that always comes to mind for me in that case is Salvador Dali. What is it about his artwork that everyone seems to respond to? Everyone that encounters his work, they're just like, whoa. You know, whether they're an art historian at Harvard or whether they're just the average Joe on the street. They're just like, damn, dude, that's cool. Or, oh, yes, this evokes, you know, psychological tropes reminiscent of the Jungian art, whatever, you know. It's communicating and on another level, you know. And I can't deny the power of that. And to me, that's why I like, and here I am one-upping you guys right now. But I mean, it's
no,
like...
No, not at all, yeah.
But you know what I mean? No, it's kind of like, there's something there. There's something there. And all people, we're all human beings, and we all have the same core emotions, and whether or not it's a football score that stirs us, or it's the fact that, you know, IHVH is the teeth, or whatever, you know, it's like, there's something there, and I don't know. I've always had a real strong aversion to dismissiveness, and whether it's people dismissing a conspiracy theory, whether it's dismissing, you know, how, you know, a Britney Spears song or a Mahler symphony or whatever. It's like they're all forms of human expression at the end of the day, and that's where they all originate from. And sure, they all become in some form bastardized by the consumer industrial complex, but it's, I don't know, I just find at the end of the day it's all stardust, man, and it's all like,
exactly,
you know. And so that's to me, what I find really fascinating is that
you can find truth in an episode of Friends as easily as you can find truth in Finnegan's Wake.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from Syncbook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other Syncbook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Find Us Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. To find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.